Once the people were awakened to the fact that they'd been deceived, they acted as one.
This is Mission 66, bringing the Bible to life, chapter by chapter. Presented by TWR in partnership with the ministry of Dr. Luis Seau. Today, John Matthews and Esther Sisulu are teaching about the kingdom of God established through the line of David in 1 Kings. You can follow along with your downloadable study guide on mission66.org. Let's join John and Esther.
Our journey through the book of 1 Kings continues here on Mission 66, and it chronicles a historical period in ancient Israel known as the monarchy. Now, perhaps you've heard of the prophet Elijah, but if you haven't read the Bible, you may not know the whole story. So today, our teacher, John Matthews, will bring us to chapters 17 and 18 with the theme, Elijah versus the priests of Baal.
Esther, thank you so much. Great to be with you, and a very, very warm welcome to Mission 66. Wherever you're joining us from today, it is so good to have your company. And we're going to get straight into it today because in our last episode, we see the rise of a man called Ahab, notorious as one of the worst kings of ancient Israel, because he and his wife, Queen Jezebel, had led the 10 northern tribes into serious Baal worship. And to oppose them, God sends them a prophet whose name is Elijah. What does he do? Why has God sent him? Well, God sends him to speak truth into their false worship. Boy, is that a message for our societies today. Truth. Well, Elijah speaks truth just as Jesus Christ spoke truth, and indeed more than spoke truth, was the truth. And as we read the Bible, we see Elijah in this great conflict with King Ahab. Elijah said to Ahab, "As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve, there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years except at my word." So Elijah says that there's going to be a drought. The relationship between the prophet of God and the king of Israel, I think, is best described as stormy. The situation stormy, but the ground is bone dry. And the Lord sends Elijah into this hiding place close to a stream in Kereth Ravine on the eastern side of the Jordan. And there he's got water to drink from the stream. And ravens come to feed Elijah in this extraordinary way. It says the ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning and bread and meat in the evening. And he drank from the brook. Well, the lack of rain causes this brook then to go dry. And then God tells Elijah to go to the city of Zarephath in Sidon and stay there. And he said that a widow would then bring him food. So Elijah obeys the Lord. And when he gets there, he encounters the widow. And so he asks for a piece of bread. But she says, "As surely as the Lord your God lives, I do not have any bread, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little olive oil in a jug. I'm gathering a few sticks to take home and make a meal for myself and my son that we may eat it and then die." So he meets this woman and she herself is in despair. But Elijah says, "Don't be afraid. The jar of flour will not be used up and the jug of oil will not run dry until the day that the Lord sends rain on the land." This woman, this widow in a time of great crises, decides to obey the divine word. And in a miraculous way, it happens that the food lasts a very long time. It feeds Elijah, the woman, and her family, and the oil from the jug never runs dry, or at least it doesn't run dry. And the flour in the jar never ended, and the word of the God is fulfilled. And this widow, unlike the king, is able to have faith, and as a result of that, faith is provided for in a supernatural way. Isn't there a lesson there for us and an encouragement as well? But then the woman's son gets ill, really ill. Verse 17 says that after this, the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, became ill. and his illness was so severe that there was no breath left in him. And she said to Elijah, "What have you against me, O man of God? You've come to me to bring my sin to remembrance and to cause the death of my son." Now, it's possible that this poor woman had a guilty conscience because of something in her past, so she had assumed that the death of her son was connected to something she had done, but that's not how God works, and that was certainly not the case here. Verse 19, he said to her, "Give me your son." And he took him from her arms and carried him up into the upper chamber where he lodged and laid him on his own bed. And Elijah cried to the Lord, "O Lord, my God, have you brought calamity even upon the widow with whom I sojourn by killing her son?" Then he stretched himself upon the child three times and cried to the Lord, "O Lord, my God, let this child's life come into him again." And the Lord listened to the voice of Elijah, and the life of the child came into him again, and he revived. And Elijah took the child and brought him down from the upper chamber into the house and delivered him to his mother. And Elijah said, "See, your son lives." And the woman said to Elijah, "Now I know that you are a man of God, and that the word of the Lord in your mouth is truth." So with this circumstance, this special moment, we see a moment of great distress, and yet at the same time, God's power manifests itself in an extraordinary way in the life of this prophet. And God, in the third year of the drought, he then sends Elijah to go before Ahab because the rain would return. Now, the famine was severe in Samaria, and Ahab was looking for Obadiah. Now, Obadiah was a God-fearing man. And in those days, the wife of Ahab, who was a foreign woman, the famous queen of the Sidonians, was involved directly in the worship of Baal. And she was killing all the prophets of God. So Obadiah was hiding around 100 prophets in two different caves. And so he's being sought by Ahab. And Ahab then asks him to go to all the springs and valleys of the land to try to find something to keep his horses and his mules alive. And each one went in one direction. And Obadiah then encounters the great prophet Elijah. And in their dialogue, Obadiah says, "Look, you are being sought out. King Ahab wants to find you at any cost. But if I go to the king to tell him of this, he will certainly end up killing me. Yet I, your servant, have worshipped the Lord since my youth. Haven't you heard, my Lord, what I did whilst Jezebel was killing the prophets of the Lord?" Obadiah says, "Look, the situation in the kingdom is terrible. Zero tolerance exists for the prophets of God." So he's frightened. But Elijah calms him down and says, "As the Lord Almighty lives, whom I serve, I will surely present myself to Ahab today." And so this encounter takes place, and Elijah meets Ahab, and Ahab doesn't treat him well. He calls him a troubler of Israel. But Elijah says, "Look, the one who troubles Israel is you and your father's family because you abandoned the Lord and are now following Baal." And Elijah calls forth Ahab to this great duel, this sort of debate. And now we really have a moment of great conflict between the two different perspectives on life and faith. And what we see next is Elijah telling Ahab to call forth all the prophets of Baal. Verse 19 says, "Now summon the people from all over Israel to meet me on Mount Carmel, and bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table." So the entire scenario has been defined, and Elijah's going to face all of these pagan prophets on his own. Some challenge it might seem, because Elijah then says, I am the only one of the Lord's prophets left, but Baal has 450 prophets. So prepare a sacrifice. Bring two bulls to be placed and offered on the altar. Place wood on the altar. Then he says, let's see who the real God is. I'm going to invoke the name of my God, and you are going to invoke the name of Baal. And the God that answers with fire, the one who has the power of fire, this indeed is the real God. So the prophets of Baal begin to call out to their God, asking Baal to send fire from the heavens if he is indeed the true God who has the power. And they cry out to Baal, it says, from morning until midday, and they scream and they dance, and nothing. They even begin to mutilate themselves, and nothing. In fact, as time wears on and the hours pass, Elijah finds some amusement in what he's watching. He says, go on, say it louder. Maybe your God is meditating, or maybe he's far away, travelling somewhere, or maybe he's taking a nap, maybe he's asleep. Let's wake Baal up. And then after all of that, what does Elijah do? Well, he goes and he takes 12 stones, one for each of the tribes of Israel, and with the stones he makes an altar for the Lord. He then digs around the altar, and there he places firewood, and he fills four big jugs of water, and he pours them on the altar, on the offering, and on the firewood, so that they are sodden. So, effectively, very little chance of them catching fire, well, none whatsoever. But then he cries to the one true God. The prophet Elijah stepped forward and prayed, answer me, Lord, answer me, so these people will know that you, Lord, are God, and that you are turning their hearts back again. And then the fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, and the soil. It also licked up the water in the trench. And when all the people saw this, they fell prostrate and cried, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. And Elijah said to them, seize the prophets of Baal. Let not one of them escape. And they seized them. And Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slaughtered them there. And Elijah said to Ahab, go up, eat and drink, for there is a sound of the rushing of rain. And Ahab went up to eat and to drink. And Elijah went up to the top of Mount Carmel, and he bowed himself down on the earth and put his face between his knees. And he said to his servant, go up now, look toward the sea. And he went up and looked, and he said, there is nothing. And he said, go again, seven times. And at the seventh time, he replied, behold, a little cloud like a man's hand is rising from the sea. And he said, go up and say to Ahab, prepare your chariot and go down, lest the rain stop you. And in a little while the heavens grew black with clouds and wind, and there was a great rain. And Ahab rode and went to Jezreel, and the hand of the Lord was on Elijah, and he gathered up his garment, and he ran before Ahab to the entrance of Jezreel. After all those years where there had been no rain, the rain comes now, and we see how the situation was stormy, but the ground is dry. But God sends this fire from heavens, proving that he is the true God, the only one to be worshipped. So once that God sees that the people were genuine, authentic in their repentance. What happens? He sends this relieving, life-giving rain.
Thank you for staying with us here on Mission 66. I'm Esther, and of course I'm armed with a few questions for our teacher, John Matthews. But perhaps you have a question or two, or perhaps even a comment that you'd like to share with us. I invite you to search us on Facebook and on Instagram on Mission 66, and there you can leave your comment. And of course, we look forward to interacting with you and engaging in discourse on what we're learning in today's episode. Now, of course, we are looking through the book of 1 Kings, but John, there is a lot of space devoted to the prophet Elijah in these chapters that we've read. So what should we understand from this?
Well, look, the book, Esther, was written about Israel's monarchy and its covenant relationship with God. And so when a king honors God and behaves as God desires, because God knows that is the only way for humanity to find peace and for it to work, well, things go differently than when a king acts wrongly and follows the idol worship path of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, in which God had to try and intervene and take measures to correct things. And in this case, God is sending a guy who becomes known as one of his most faithful prophets, Elijah, to address the scene. And the problem is severe, and so the solution is severe too. Even the later prophets who wrote books of the Bible were not as striking as this Elijah. And as we read further into the book of Kings, Elijah's disciple Elisha will prove to be another great prophet.
Now, in these chapters, John, we see the servant Obadiah, who was providing for the priests during the reign of what we could call a wicked, murderous queen. Now, the question is, how is it that the servant of God could continue working for Jezebel despite what she was doing to God's priests?
Well, yeah, interesting question, Esther. He may well have not had a choice. He probably had to do what he was told in order to survive. So working in pretty tricky circumstances, no doubt about that. But it's very clear that he is secretly, and as he's able, a godly man, infiltrating Jezebel's house, even taking bread from her pantry to feed the prophets in hiding. So even in the midst of this evil environment, well, there's a light doing good to the prophets and keeping the prophets alive.
Oh, yeah, you can most certainly say that he was doing the Lord's work, which is quite a popular phrase amongst the young people these days. But nonetheless, what is the significance of the widow of Zarephath in this particular account?
Well, God, as seen through the words of Jesus in that brilliant Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the meek. And God demonstrates how he attends to those who are poor in spirit and surrender ourselves to him. We're in need. Every one of us is in desperate need. But God needs us to humble ourselves to the point where we realize that need and surrender to him, wherein is peace, life eternal, and our weakness is recognized, yet hardly realized at times, but our weaknesses somehow are morphed by God through his strength into something that he can use. And so we have this poor widow's prayer, which is heard, and God helps. He hears her voice, but she was asked to give first to God, and then came the supernatural provision.
All right, thanks for that, John. Well, you know what? Let's go ahead and get some understanding as to why God punishes Israel with a drought.
Well, look, yeah, remember one aspect of Baal worship is the belief that Baal controls the weather, the rain and the lightning and everything therein. So God here perhaps leading Elijah to show Ahab, Jezebel and all of their followers that Baal has no power whatsoever. There is no such thing as a Baal with power. It's just an idol, an empty idol that will bring nothing ultimately to people, but promises much. God here shows Elijah to show the likes of Ahab, Jezebel, and everyone else gathered that God and God alone, in his almighty power, has control of the elements, of the earth, of the weather in which we live.
And then on Mount Carmel, these Baal worshippers, they literally could not get anything to happen, despite their best efforts. But Elijah called upon God and the lightning fell and burned up the entire offering. I think once again, showing and demonstrating the power of God.
Yeah, it certainly did. And it had been soaked with water three times. And the verse says the fire licked up the water even from that trench.
Well, John, we know that there was a drought in the situation. So where did they get all of this water from?
Ah, perceptive question. Esther, fair play. Well, look, Mount Carmel is actually located next to the sea. So, goodness, they might have been able to get it from there, although it would have been quite a climb. But, I'm not exactly sure. But on the ball, as always, Esther, love that.
Well, you know what? I'm quite happy with that answer. Thank you so much for at least giving us an idea of where they could have gotten it from. But let's look now to the punishment of Baal's prophets. I don't know. Would you say that perhaps it was a little excessive?
Well, you know, look, some of the things that happen in the Old Testament are impossible for us to explain. We can talk about cultural context. We can talk about different times, but ultimately, they are impossible for us to explain without any understanding or realization of what it was really like and why it was like that. You know, we know that Baal's prophets had already killed many prophets of the Lord, and idolatry, worshipping another god, was something that was punishable by death under the law of Moses. But yeah, it may seem excessive to us, but we know, don't we, that God sees what may have come to pass thereafter had this course of action not been taken. And so God has no other choice but to take this course of action. And so he, with all his foresight, knowing the beginning from the end, allows this course of action where we can only see what is right in front of our noses.
Well, thanks, John. You know, I think we can take these next few moments now to wrap up in the form of our summary.
Yeah, let's do that then. Well, look, our episode today was Elijah versus the priests of Baal, all 450 plus another 400, so 850 prophets in all, but 450 Baal prophets, one against 450. You might think not a very fair match, but the most important thing was that Elijah had God on his side. And when God's people go astray, well, God sends correction through the prophets and he compels the people to listen. It's impossible to argue with what they've seen here, because God's supernatural provision, first of all, for the widow of Zarephath, encourages us as we read the story that if we give God first place, he will provide for us. He will. Not he may. There's a good chance. There's potential. No. He promises. Honor God. He honors you in ways we couldn't possibly imagine. So we put him in first place. He provides for us, even and sometimes most especially in the toughest of situations.
Well, we certainly serve a good God indeed, and it's wonderful that we can spend this time to get to know him better right here on Mission 66. Well, I'm Esther for John and our entire team, inviting you to join us next time as we continue to look through the book of 1 Kings. Until then, may God bless you.
Let me remind you to head on over to mission66.org to download your study guide. It's free. Dive deeper into the Bible teaching of John Matthews and learn how it all relates to your Christian walk. Tag along with John and Esther on our Bible road trip, episode by episode. Your study guide's waiting for you at mission66.org. That's where you can also post your questions or make a comment, and even help out with a donation to keep Mission 66's heart beating around the world. Hop on over to mission66.org. Mission 66 is a partnership of TWR and the ministry of Dr. Luis Seau.